Hello, everybody. Can you hear okay? Welcome to the second of our collective breath talks. This one is entitled Bodies of Air. My name's Tammy Bedford, and I'm one of the organisers of this World of Art project. We've been bringing contemporary art to WOMAD for 5 years now, but this is the first time that we've been able to present a brand new work, especially for WOMAD. And we're delighted that we've been able to work with Neville Gaby, who's sitting next to me, on his Experiments in Black and White project. What we're doing as part of this talk is bringing together people from different disciplines and interests to talk about air and breathing from their perspective. And so we have Maria Fannin, who is a human geographer with a particular interest in air and breathing during pregnancy and childbirth, and Anita Ganesan, who's a researcher in greenhouse gas emissions from the University of Bristol. I'm going to ask each of the speakers to talk for about 8 minutes, and I'll keep an eye on the time, and we'll have a bit of time at the end for discussion, questions and answers. So I'm going to ask Neville to start off by introducing his project.
About 5 years ago, I went to Antarctica with the British Antarctic Survey, and I went as an artist in residence at Halley Research Station. And I wanted to go with the scientists and actually do something very whimsical and playful, having made this extreme journey. So I proposed going to Antarctica and flying kites and filming the landscape with the kites. But actually, when you're there, when you encounter that space, that place, the science, I think one's whole perspective changes radically. And Halley is perhaps most well known for being the station which first detected and measured ozone and ozone depletion. So a lot of the research they do there is atmospheric. On my return from Halley, I was invited to be artist in residence with the Cabot Institute at Bristol University. And Cabot Institute is really across university and wider than Bristol University, across all universities, an umbrella organization whose aim is really to bring people who working in climate change from all sorts of different fields to work collaboratively together. I feel kind of slightly self-conscious describing that in front of Philippa, but I spent some time at the university. I spent a lot of time with different scientists. Pretty much all the work that you'll see here at WOMAD, the experiments in black and white, were born out of that. So a lot of time with social geographers looking at fossil fuels, the implications of that, working with chalk. But there was one occasion in particular where I went to it was like an open forum discussion around air. And there were a mixture of scientists, academics in the room. One was a chemist, Matt Rigby, and he was talking about measuring sort of air pollution and, you know, taking the tiniest of samples of air and, tracking the pollutants in that, you know. And he described it in a really, really kind of magical way. There was a classicist there, Eileen, who talked about playing a musical instrument, and she described playing her musical instrument as there being a column of air from the pit of your stomach through your body to the tip of the instrument. And I think there was sitting in that room and listening to those conversations really made me start to think about air as a physical substance in a way in which I hadn't before. It's a very different form, obviously, to oil or chalk, but it's a substance which carries all sorts in it. And I'm sorry, I'm not an academic, I'm certainly not a scientist, but that kind of cross-fertilization of ideas, I think, is really where a lot of this project was born out of, and I think what the real strength of an organization like Cabot is. I thought, just because it's all about the other speakers today, but I thought just before I finish, I'm going to read you a little passage from a book which it's by Primo Levi. It's called Periodic Table. It's a book I've been carrying around since I was a student, actually, at the Royal College a very long time ago. And there was one chapter that he wrote about carbon, which even then I marked out, but came back to me very strongly after that little that talk. So I'll just read a small portion of it. But he's describing an atom of carbon, which is very stable, doesn't change, but actually moves from one form to another. But precisely for the good fortune of the narrator, whose story would otherwise have come to an end, The limestone rock ledge of which the atom forms a part lies on the surface. It lies within reach of man and his pickaxe. All honour to the pickaxe and its modern equivalents. They are still the most important intermediaries in the millennial dialogue between the elements and man. At any moment, which I, the narrator, decide out of pure caprice to be 1840, a blow of the pickaxe detached it, sent it on its way to a lime kiln, plunged it into a world of things that change. It was roasted until it separated from the calcium, which remained, so to speak, with its feet on the ground, and it went to meet a less brilliant destiny, which we shall not narrate. Still firmly clinging to its two former oxygen companions, it issued from the chimney and took a path of the air. Its story, which once was immobile, now turned tumultuous. It was caught by the wind, flung down on the earth, lifted 10 kilometers high. It was breathed in by a falcon descending into its precipitous lungs, but did not penetrate its rich blood and was expelled. It was dissolved three times in the water of the sea, once in the water of a cascading torrent, and again was expelled. It traveled with the wind for 8 years, now high, now low, on the sea among the clouds, over forests, deserts, and limitless expanses of ice. Then it stumbled into the capture and the organic adventure. So in a sense, it was me thinking about, you know, those ideas of air that made me want to do the collective breath. And being at WOMAD, I really wanted to do something where we could collect, as I said, the breath of a number of people and use that collectively to play a sound. And I think at that point, really, I'm going to hand over to the speakers.
Well, thank you. Just got to make sure the holding this close enough to my mouth. My name is Maria Fannin, and I'm a social geographer at the University of Bristol. And I just want to thank everyone for inviting us, Tammy and Jenny and Neville, especially for creating a space where we could come together like this. I'm going to just talk for a few minutes about some thoughts that I think might resonate with all the speakers who will be speaking today, as well as some of the speakers from yesterday. Because I think we tend to think of air in slightly different ways, or atmosphere, perhaps, in slightly different ways. And some of that in the university relates to how we divide our disciplines, how we think about air as a kind of substance of nature, organic or inorganic, a kind of chemical element, and how perhaps in a different sort of definition we might think of air as a way of understanding atmosphere. And for someone interested in social relations and how people relate to each other, we might think of emotions and mood as a way in which we actually talk about air, but in a slightly different way. We can think about how those singers, the sound both resonated in a kind of physical way, but also perhaps resonated in a more emotional or social way. And I think, and it's interesting that, we tend to divide air into those kind of natural science and human science and kind of classify air or atmosphere in different ways. But that perhaps an event like this is a way of recovering something of an older unity of air and of thinking about perspectives that get us to interrogate both the individual and the collective ways we might understand air. And there was a speaker yesterday, hi Ellen, who spoke about breath in relationship to music. And I think that was really, really inspiring, because it made us think about the kind of physicality of air, but also how air and breath are part of how we express ourselves as people. And I wanted to perhaps think a bit more about that living relationship with air and turn to someone who I would suggest is trying to, in my own work and the work that I've been doing, to think about that kind of older unity of the way in which we understand air as a physical substance and the way in which we understand air's absolutely elemental relationship to us as living beings. And so I thought I would read just a passage from a philosopher whose work tries to, I think, bring together some of these ways of thinking about air, and specifically about breath. And this is a philosopher, Luce Irigaray, who's written an interesting book looking at her own individual practice of yoga and how she can think about that kind of space of joining the physical and the kind of living aspect of being together in her own work. And so she starts one of her chapters on entitled The Way of Breath with this passage. She says, "Breathing corresponds to the first autonomous gesture of the living human being. To come into the world supposes inhaling and exhaling by oneself. In the uterus, we receive oxygen through the mother's blood. We are not yet autonomous, not yet born. And in fact, we forget this first and last gesture of life. To be sure, we breathe on pain of death. But she suggests we breathe badly today. We worry little about the air that surrounds us, our first food of life. We put ourselves under stress in order to force ourselves to breathe. We carry out athletic performances in polluted air, for example. But we do not really take charge of our life, of our respiration, of the air. She continues, we speak of elementary needs like the need to eat and to drink, but not of the need to breathe. That corresponds nevertheless to our first and most radical need. And we are not really born, not really autonomous or living as long as we do not take care in a conscious and voluntary way of our breathing. And I think it's this taking care of our breath as a kind of separation and as a way of sharing that in some ways projects like this allow us to think more about. She suggests that actually one of the models we might use for expanding our notion of breath as a way of sharing is to think about the world of plants. And it's why I didn't bring the book as my object, but actually brought a leaf. And I said, I didn't pick this off one of our trees. I found it on the ground. But in another set of works, this particular philosopher, and I think you know this reflects many of our perhaps reflections on nature and on plants. She talks about and speaks about the economy of taking in and letting go that breathing implies. Air is not an appropriable thing. It's something we cannot own, really, or perhaps we should not think of as a form of property, but yet as something that we share. And that the plant world demonstrates to us in a kind of silence how sharing life or sharing air can augment and enhance our living being, and how dividing and classifying, perhaps turning into property or seen only as a kind of productive resource, diminishes our capacity to live. So I'll stop there.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anita Gannison, and I'm a scientist at the University of Bristol. And my field of area is called atmospheric chemistry. So what I do is I look at and I try to understand the composition of our atmosphere. And so one of the things that I find really, I suppose what I think about it is really amazing is that we all know that we have oxygen in the air and we live off of oxygen. But I think what we forget is that air is really, it's a mixture of so many different things. And the primary things that I focus on are things that are at such minute levels in the atmosphere, and these are the greenhouse gases. But what they do is, by being, they're so small, yet they give us the climate that we live in. And so just to stress the importance of this and to understand how these greenhouse gases interact with the Earth and how the Earth interacts with it is just, it's a fascinating subject because of the complexity. And, you know, we've all heard about carbon dioxide because this is, you know, it's in the news every day. And it's a gas that's just so ingrained in our society. But so we, you know, we emit things, we use fossil fuels, but we breathe it. I mean, we forget that we actually make this and plants take it up. And there's this huge amount of interaction between plants and biology. And trying to understand how we fit into that picture is just a really interesting subject. And at the university, we work on other gases. So there's CO2, but we look at methane and nitrous oxide. And, you know, what all of these gases have in common is that they are all sort of ingrained in the Earth system. So we as humans, we perturb it and we change things. But really, the fundamental understanding of it comes from understanding biology and how we, what our place is with the biology on Earth. And so I wanted to do a little demonstration. I don't know how this is going to go in a tent, but so one of the main questions that we try to answer is how much of these gases do we emit and where do they come from? Because ultimately we need to know that kind of information in order to truly know how we're altering the Earth system. And so I want to do a little demonstration of how we go about actually doing this. So what I have is a little bottle of perfume. And so what this represents is going to be our CO2 source. And so this here is CO2, and it might be a power plant or something like that. So what I'm going to do is spray it, and hopefully not spray anyone in the eyes. Okay, this may not go over here. So I think, hopefully, if this does work according to plan, somebody in the front row, maybe Neville here, can you smell it? Okay, and you probably smell it quite strongly because I sprayed it right in front of you. But I think if we wait about 20 seconds, you can smell it, right? You can smell it. And if we wait another 10 seconds, can you start smelling it in the back? Okay, so I think what this is trying to show here, right? So right in the front, we get this very big signal here. Neville said I smelled it really, really strongly, and it was almost instantaneous. About 5 seconds later, it moved over to you, to this lady, and she started smelling it. And it might have been a little bit more, you know, less strong than Neville over here. Now we wait 20 seconds, and the whole room kind of gets a little whiff of it, but it's quite even. I don't think there's much difference between if you're over there and what you're over there. And what this just tries to illustrate is that, you know, eventually we kind of have to take responsibility for everyone. If I emit something here, really, it affects you down there. It's not just me. It's not just Neville. And so what we as scientists try to do is we try to measure these signals. So now if we extrapolate this to the entire world, we have detectors that are looking at carbon dioxide and methane and nitrous oxide. And so we might have a station. Neville here might be a station, and he's going to tell me when I measure, when he feels CO2. And then this lady over here might have a signal. She'll be another detector, and about 20 seconds later, she measured it. And then eventually, everyone else is starting to measure it. So what this really equates to is we get this fingerprint, right? So we know if we had all this data, we can start unraveling where was this perfume bottle. We would know where the wind was blowing, and we can start saying, okay, well, it came from this direction. Neville felt it first. It was the strongest, so it had to be in this direction. It was over here. And so really, this is this problem that we're trying to untangle. And by looking at many, many detectors around the world, of course, this is more complicated because there's going to be perfume all around the world that we're trying to unravel. But I just want to highlight that this is really, it's a collective effort because we have colleagues all around the world. This isn't just us at Bristol. This is really a global effort with scientists everywhere measuring and contributing data and trying to work together to try to unravel this story. And so I just wanted to leave it there and sort of highlight the fact that in our field, nothing is really done alone. This is really everyone working together trying to look at the Earth as a whole and see how we're all affecting one another. So I thought I'd just leave it there.
Thank you. So we've had some fascinating insights into air and breathing from the perspectives of chemistry, philosophy, art, and of course, starting with music.